Ladies and gentlemen, I think we'll begin the second portion of the program, the question and answer. Again, my name is Susan Giffen, and I'm moderating a session on Will Lethbridge's Most Vulnerable Seniors Soon Be at Risk? And David Agin from the Friends of Medicare is speaking with us today. Now, next week, we have a fourth in the series of our topic, Have Albertans Given the Stelmic Government a Free Ride? And Greg Wedick will come next week. He is our fourth speaker. We've had Paul Hinman of the Alberta Alliance. Pardon me, Brian Mason. Couldn't remember his first name. Brian Mason of the NDP. And who came from the Liberals? Oh, Bridget. Bridget Pasteur was here from the Liberals. Sorry, that's a real bad one for me to make. So next week we have Greg, who is going to address this same question, and he will be aware of what the other three speakers have said. And come, please, hear what he's got to say and ask more questions on whether or not Albertans have given the Stelmic government a free ride. Now I'm going to call David back to the podium. The mic is there waiting. Please remember when you go to the mic to say your name. If you've got a statement to make, that's fine. Keep it short, then ask a question, and David will respond to your questions. So, we will begin.
Thank you, and certainly it's nice to, we started our discussion already at our table. And like I said, I kind of left some of the specific Lethbridge stuff out, as I did some of the political stuff, so fire away, I'm not shy. Neither should you be. Yes.
Hi, I'm Diane Pointer. Am I on?
Yeah,
a retired nurse, and also the daughter of a 92-year-old mother who is going to be looking at assisted living right away, quick-like. So I've got lots of concerns. But as we look at this, assisted living or designated assisted living, was that not all established in the early 90s as a way of avoiding, you change the name of the rose to something else and then it is something else? Anyway, a way of avoiding having to open the Nursing Home Act and make changes within that act. The government was afraid that maybe there'd be more put on them in the way of responsibility and provision of seniors, so they invent a whole new thing. Now, anyway, that's my question.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, and I think it's about 13 or 14 years ago now where they started this process, but they are simply accelerating it now, and the difference is that in your region, Chinook, former Chinook Health region, there's a very aggressive plan to reduce the amount of what they call traditional auxiliary beds, and so that goes beyond the long-term care beds, but also beds that are used in smaller rural hospitals and centers for whatever, different things. They have to be flexible. And so it's just, I think the intensity has increased. And certainly, don't get me wrong, I think daily assisted living has its merits. You want to live in place in a home-like environment. Everybody wants that. But it flies in the face of reality that 7 to 15% of the population needs more intense long-term care at some point in their lives. And, this is not just seniors as well. There are long-term care facilities for anyone, of any age group as well. So, yes, thank you.
My name is Bob Hiranaka. I'm wondering, I hear about this Medicare and so on and so forth, and I only hear the dollars. And I think that we need to approach the whole issue on a health point of view. And so how much interest is there, or how much knowledge is there out there on issues such as nutrition, our foods, our lifestyles, and our foods? We go to Safeway and buy foods, and you look on the table and it says it's got this. I don't believe it, because our foods are changing with the way we are producing it, and our needs are changing as we age.
Yep.
There's very little actual research on gerontology, you know, real fine research. And it seems to me that I might want to know how much interest Friends of Medicare have in the area of nutrition and other avenues.
Well, it's duly noted, sir, for your comments on that, and I think that it's our main concern is that the government treats our public Medicare system in a reductive way. They're constantly trying to narrow the scope by which we look at these public issues and deal with them in a public way. And one of the most important ways that we should look at our health care in the future is to look at the social determinants of health. And I know my wife works at the ALEC in Edmonton. It's a big downtown hospital. And it's a small percentage of the population using so much of the healthcare system. And it's almost entirely to do with poverty and addictions. And until we address those social determinants of health, these people, through poverty and addiction, are not accessing a healthy lifestyle. First and foremost amongst those things is food and accommodation. And so until we address those issues, of which we can, it's so much easier and so much cheaper to be preventative in regards to health issues like that. If someone is given a place to live, you save money on so many other things, not just health care, but law enforcement and everything. We know that the figures have been done, and so as public health advocates, we certainly expect that it includes the preventative benefits of nutrition. Yes, thank you.
David, my name is Stan Sawicki.
Yes.
First of all, I just want to thank you for your talk, David. You know, David, it just made so much sense.
Thanks.
Well, to me anyway. I've got this clipping from the Lethbridge Herald. Liepert refuses to issue apology. And it's the little article about him turning down your application to go on the Super Board.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking also, it's just too bad that the common sense you've shown here today isn't going to be available to the Super Board.
Okay.
I speculated on possible reasons why the minister might have turned you down.
Yeah.
One speculation was maybe it's because you're not the CEO of some big corporation that's trying to get a cut of the healthcare pie.
Yeah. That's true.
And the other is that from your political career, the minister would know that you're not a card-carrying member of the Conservative Party.
No, definitely not a communist.
I must have made this speech before in another context. Okay, my question is just this. The headline says he refuses to apologize, but that's beside the point. What I'm wondering, did he give you any reason at all for turning you down?
Well, you know, as I said before, the confidentiality of a part of it is what the part that I took exception to. And, you know, but it does lead us to, I think, ask questions as to what did they tell the headhunting company to, what questions, what parameters were they working with to choose this board. I mean, we can see the results. And certainly, I'm not going to disparage the individuals on that board. I will judge them by their actions. But you can see the appalling absence of healthcare professionals, healthcare advocates, and people involved in healthcare governance around this province, of which we are rich in this province. I would venture to say as well, why is there such a gender imbalance when we're dealing with healthcare, where we have, again, an incredible variety of experienced and track-proven women in this province that could deal with this properly. There's just an imbalance that I think reflects a lack of commitment to the public interest in this health board. And one more thing about the health board. Obviously, if they're going to make major changes and reforms to the healthcare system, the super board's not going to be making those decisions. It'll be made by the premier and the cabinets. This is the most volatile political thing, it's the biggest part of their budget that they have to deal with. They're not going to hand it over to people on one-year terms on a super board to make those decisions. The big decisions will come from the cabinet and from the premier, and they have to wear those decisions. They can't say, oh, well, it was the super board, you know, it wasn't us that did it. You know, we have to be aware of that. I think we're sufficiently educated to do that, but we have to remind everybody that they could play that game. So, no, I'm not bothered. I'm gainfully employed. I'm the executive director of Friends of Medicare, which is one of the most proud positions I've ever held. And so I don't need to be on the super board. Yes, sir.
David, my name is Art Sanford, and I'm not gainfully employed.
Yeah.
But I did spend the past 7 years as director of Chinook Health, which position I was elected to by the city of people here.
For you.
But my question has to do with the greater picture of public health and the Medicare system. When you look around the world, what is happening in healthcare, and I exclude the U.S. because they don't rate, but if you take a look, World Health Organization, United Nations, and several other groups grade healthcare around the world on quality, technology, timeliness, cost effectiveness. Canada rates somewhere between the low 20s, 22, to somewhere around the 30s. In other words, 20 to 30 countries have a better rated system than we do in Canada. Every one of those countries, without exception, have a public and a private healthcare system operating in parallel together. In many of them, the doctors work in both areas. The nurses and other people work in both areas. In fact, in the Scandinavian countries now, admission to a hospital is both public and private in the same hospital.
Yes.
How can we keep claiming that only a public system works in Canada when we know there are at least 20 to 30 countries rated with a better system using public and private?
Well, thank you. That's a very good question. And I'm glad to have